Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Crime Weekly News. I'm Derek Levasseur.
And I'm Stephanie Harlow.
And we're going to get right into the episode. Before we do, just a quick reminder. I think it was in last week's Crime Weekly. Based on the episode, you'd have to go see it to understand what I'm talking about. But we came up with a code for Criminal Coffee. It's Muffin10. If you go use Muffin10 right now, you can get 10% off on your Criminal Coffee Co. order. Just to make sure everyone, we get a couple questions about it. This is on coffee only, not on merch. The reason for that is pretty simple. It's two different stores. The coffee's coming from us. The merch is coming from a third party. So the discount system is different. But we are working on that. And as far as I know, we should be switching over to have everything under one site where the code will work for both. You can buy merch and coffee together, all that good stuff, within the next week or so. And I know that Christina Hall, who does a lot of our website design, is watching this or listening to this right now. She's been a fan of the show since the beginning. That's actually how I met her.
Shout out to Christina.
Shout out Christina. So Christina, let's get it done. Christina's doing a great job.
If you need a website built, she's your girl.
She's your girl. Yeah, we're doing
it. As long as it doesn't take away from us.
Yes, exactly. And Christina's been working on this with J&R Marketing. Shout out to them as well to get this all set up for you guys. So hopefully it'll be done by the time this video goes live or shortly after. So again,
and right in time for spring, because yes, we got the cutest crop tops and crop t-shirts in our merch store for Criminal Coffee. They are so freaking cute. I love them. I wear them all the time. And you can pick up a bunch of those. Should we do like a spring merch discount within a few months?
I'm sure we will. I'm sure something will pop up and we'll have a discount, and it will be in time for everything to be under the same website umbrella. So it'll make it a lot easier.
Maroon crop t-shirt is your go-to. Go get you one.
All right, we're going to get right into this week's case. Some of you may have heard about it before. Some of you may have not. It's a little bit of an older case, about 20 years old. But I'm always fascinated by these types of cases because what seems like it's a hard hill to climb, with the newest science and technology, we end up getting some results. So I'll get into the backstory of it, and then we can discuss it. 16-year-old Autumn McClure was last seen on May 10th, 2004, and was reported missing by her grandmother in Ormond Beach, Florida. In late February of 2024, remains were discovered at a mobile home park, and DNA extracted from the bones identified the remains as belonging to Autumn. So obviously, on one hand, very sad. On the other hand, something that may have not been solvable 30 years ago, 40 years ago, now we're able to use science, DNA technology, IgG, investigative genetic genealogy, to take a body that presumably has been there for almost 20 years, and we're able to extract DNA from those bones and get some answers to start. I'll let Stephanie go into the backstory of this, and then we can talk about where we go from here, because obviously the first step is just finding Autumn. Now we have to figure out what happened to her.
Yeah, and there's actually an interesting sort of DNA twist to this that I'll talk about at the end. But it's more than even just, you know, new DNA advancements. There's now this rapid DNA thing that they can use on site instead of having to send it off to the lab, which makes all of the results come back much faster. And that's actually great. Like, I might as well just talk about it now because I already am. But basically, in this case, the sheriff's department used something called, I think it's ANDE, it's A-N-D-E, rapid DNA technology. And they did this instead of sending the DNA samples of the bones of the remains to the state crime lab. This significantly helped to reduce the time of making an identification. And in 2016, this company, ANDE, became the first rapid DNA system to receive regulatory approval from the FBI. In 2017, the Rapid DNA Act of 2017 was passed unanimously by the House and Senate. And this law actually allows rapid DNA testing of arrestees at police stations. And this obviously solves many problems, right? It allows for a major step forward in reducing sexual assault and other violent crimes. I mean, we talk about this all of the time, how there's a backlog of rape kits and DNA samples that need to be tested sitting in police stations and crime labs across the country, how these things take forever. In this case, if you arrest somebody and you suspect that this person may have been the perpetrator of violent crime or sexual assault, you can DNA test them at that point when they're arrested, and it's going to basically pop up if this person's DNA was found in any other unsolved crimes. And I think that's great because even if you took their DNA when they got arrested and had to send it off to the crime lab, they could be released back out in the streets and a complete ghost by the time you get those results back. So here, you're getting them back immediately. And then obviously, I don't know this for sure, but I'm positive that this is the case. Once they use the rapid DNA system to test and get a positive result, they're most likely going to send physical samples over to the lab to confirm, but then hold that person until that confirmation comes in. Because I'm sure it's kind of like new technology, probably won't be able to be used in court, but is enough to hold this person while they get the crime lab or the state crime lab to verify the DNA match. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I think we're getting to a point where there's a system called AFIS, right? Do you know what AFIS is?
That's the system where the DNA goes in, right? When they arrest
people? No, that's CODIS. So, so quickly, AFIS is basically—
That was a trick question. You tried to trick me, Derek.
No, I'm not. I'm actually not trying to trick you. When we arrest someone, there's a system known as AFIS. I think it's fingerprint identification system. I don't remember what the A stands. Automated. Essentially, when you're arrested, we're able to scan your fingerprints. It's not even ink anymore. We take you over to a machine. There's a little piece of glass. If you've never been in this position before, that's great. Congrats. But we roll your finger over the glass. It immediately takes your fingerprints. We do all 10 fingers and your palms, and then we can submit that to AFIS, and then we will relatively quick, maybe within a half hour, 45 minutes, sometimes quicker, we'll get results kicked back to us if you're lying about who you say you are, or if you have something in the system where we need to be aware of it, whether that's you're wanted in a crime somewhere else or whatever it might be, we'll get that whole report back. And this sounds very similar to AFIS in that sense, where we're getting to a point where we can do fingerprints. You also mentioned CODIS. CODIS, obviously, we're uploading DNA to that system where you may be a potential offender in a crime, unidentified, and then we bring someone in, we enter them into CODIS. If it's a match, they'll come back with a hit. This is similar to that, but it seems more efficient, more rapid, which is more in line with AFIS. Because AFIS, like I said, is almost instantaneous, where if we're arresting you, by the time we finish processing you, the fingerprints, the reports, writing your court documents for your release, if you're getting released, I can go back. We have to. It was our policy. You got to go back into the AFIS system and see if you had any results kicked back yet from the system. Another way we use that is if we're trying to confirm who you say you are. If you say, yeah, my name's, you know, Derek Levasseur, I was arrested in 2016, 2017 for XYZ. When we get your AFIS report back, it's going to come back with your criminal record associated with those fingerprints, and it should match up. That's another way we can confirm it. So I've said it before. Obviously, I'm saying it again right now. We're in a situation where there's this really interesting time in true crime where we're kind of daily making advancements where before you know it, DNA is going to be like a fingerprint, not only in its ability to identify someone, but also it's how quickly it can be done like a fingerprint. So the window of getting away with a crime is getting smaller and smaller. And that's obviously great news for us, bad news for the bad guys. But before we continue on, let's take our one break for this episode. We'll be right back.
How did you sleep last night? If you answered not so great, just okay, or don't ask, you are not alone. One out of three Americans reports being sleep deprived, and your sheets could be the problem. The wrong sheets can trap body heat, leaving you boiling 1 minute and freezing the next. And the solution to that is Cozy Earth bedding. My Cozy Earth bedding is really cozy, honestly. That's the best way to describe it, which is why it's a perfect name for it. It is soft. It keeps me at the perfect temperature, not too hot, not too cold. So I'm feeling like Goldilocks all night. Cozy Earth is life-changing luxury. Cozy Earth's best-selling bamboo sheet set is made from 100% premium viscose from bamboo, which makes them naturally temperature regulating and breathable, so you sleep more comfortably all year round. Cozy Earth's sheets are uniquely soft and only get softer with every wash. Cozy Earth is the brand that made Oprah's Favorite Things 5 years in a row. And Cozy Earth comes with a 100-night sleep trial, which means you have up to 100 nights to sleep on them, wash them, try them out, and if you're not completely in love, just return them within 100 days for a full refund. And all of their products also include a 10-year warranty against defects. Whether it's their luxury bedding, ultra-comfortable loungewear, plush bath towels, and more, you'll love shopping at Cozy Earth. So we definitely think that you should try Cozy Earth out. I know Derek loves his sheets, and I put mine on. They're in a great green color. They look so good, and they are so soft. And when you look at them, they kind of look like they have a sheen to them. They're just really pretty, really comfortable. I love them. Derek's going to tell you you can try them out for yourselves.
Yeah, if you've never tried Cozy Earth, we have some awesome news for you. You can save up to 35% off Cozy Earth right now, but you got to hurry because this offer will not last long. Just go to CozyEarth.com and enter promo code CRIMEWEEKLY at checkout for up to 35% off. One more time, that's CozyEarth.com, promo code Crime Weekly. We love Cozy Earth. We think you will as well. Go check them out. CozyEarth.com.
Yeah, so we are going to talk about the case of Autumn McClure. And it's funny because it's weird to see these cases that I've read about before but haven't actually researched and, you know, researched deeply into. It's odd to see them solved and then have them just pop up on your newsfeed, because I read an article about Autumn McClure's disappearance a few years ago. It was on Medium. It's like a blog, I guess, but they do some true crime stuff on there, and they have a lot of good writers on there. And I remember reading about her case and thinking, it's the boyfriend. But it turns out in this situation, it really probably wasn't, because Autumn was reportedly last seen by her boyfriend, and he initially told the police that he had dropped her off at Volusia Mall. But then in 2006, so 2 years after she went missing, the police spoke to Autumn's boyfriend again, at which time he changed his story and he admitted that he had dropped his girlfriend Autumn at the Seabreeze Bridge. And then he saw Autumn get into a car with a woman named Jessica Freeman. Now, police would discover that Autumn, who had been arguing with her grandmother, had moved in with Jessica Freeman and her boyfriend, Brian Donnelly, at the Shady Oaks Mobile Park. So they had basically said, okay, we know you're having problems with your grandma. You can stay with us for a few days. So when law enforcement spoke to Jessica Freeman, she denied having anything to do with it. But she also said that she, Autumn, and her boyfriend, Brian Donnelly, so Jessica's boyfriend, Brian Donnelly, who was 32 years old at the time, were having a sexual relationship. So all three of them were having a sexual relationship. Brian's 32. Autumn is 16 at this point. Gross. Gross. But then in 2021, police received a tip. It was anonymous at first, but we've just recently discovered it was a relative of Brian Donnelly's. And this tip gave law enforcement information about Jessica Freeman and Brian Donnelly potentially murdering a teenage girl and burying her body. Now, in 2022, Brian Donnelly passed away, and Jessica Freeman was questioned by police again. She told them she was only willing to cooperate if she was granted immunity. And when that deal was made and the paperwork was signed, Jessica told police what had happened, or at least what she claimed happened, because the other person in this story, both other people in this story, are dead. So I will just remind you of that. So Jessica claimed that she walked in on her boyfriend, Brian, strangling Autumn in the bathroom of their trailer. And Jessica said, you know, she ran over, she tried to stop him, but by the time she got in between the two of them, Autumn was dead. Apparently, at that point, Jessica left the trailer. But then she returned 2 weeks later, and when she came back, she noticed that Autumn's belongings, her things that she had brought to the trailer, they were gone, and the plywood that had been on the bedroom floor was also gone. Jessica Freeman claims that when she questioned her boyfriend, Brian Donnelly, about Autumn, he threatened to kill her. And obviously, the police are going to ask Jessica Freeman, why didn't you go to the police? You know, you weren't with Brian this whole time, this whole, you know, over a decade. Why did you never go to the police? And Autumn said, well, she was scared of him. She still thought he would kill her. And she was afraid of getting in trouble because of her sexual relationship with a 16-year-old girl, Which is a valid concern, I suppose, which is probably why you shouldn't have a relationship with a 16-year-old girl and your grown-ass 30-something boyfriend. But that's what Jessica Freeman claimed. She also said that before Brian's death in late 2021 or early 22, he had visited the place he'd buried Autumn, which was right around their trailer park area. And he was pleased to see that there was a modular home being built there. So finally, once Jessica Freeman gave the story of what she claims happened, she led law enforcement to Autumn's remains in late 2023. That whole modular home had to be dismantled and removed. The driveway had to be dug up, but police did uncover a set of human remains. They did take DNA from Autumn's family. They compared it to the human remains. They were a match. These remains did belong to 16-year-old Autumn McClure. Very, very sad. And obviously, Jessica says that her boyfriend Brian was strangling Autumn. But at this point, law enforcement is still working on figuring out what Autumn's cause of death is. Obviously, at this point, it's been over, what, it's been exactly 20 years, 2024 from 2014. Her remains are all skeletonized. So there may be the potential that they just never are able to confirm whether she was choked to death or not. But yeah, it's very sad. I still wonder about the boyfriend, and I definitely wonder about Jessica. Now, all the articles I read make it clear that Jessica Freeman was not a suspect, is not a suspect. They don't think she had anything to do with Autumn's death, and that's fine. But allegedly, in my opinion, I don't know if she gave the full story, because if she did have something to do with it, if she played a bigger role, she's obviously not going to tell the police that, right? She's just going to tell them exactly what she needs to make it look like she really didn't have any sort of influence or part in this. And her ex-boyfriend Brian's dead, and Autumn's obviously dead. So who's going to counter her claims? And why did the boyfriend say he dropped Autumn off at the mall, but then later he admitted to police that he dropped her off at this bridge? Well, that could have been because Autumn was running away from her grandmother's house and staying with Jessica and Brian, and the boyfriend didn't want the grandmother to know where she was, or Autumn didn't want the boyfriend to tell the police or the grandmother where she was. But after 2 years, like, they talked to him again in 2006, and that's finally when he told them the truth. After 2 years and she's still missing and she never comes home, you don't think to tell the police at some point, like, oh, actually, I didn't bring her to the mall. I brought her with these people, so you might want to check into them. You know, it just seems suspicious. It seems like there's more here that we don't know, and we probably never will.
Yeah, that I get where you're coming from, and maybe that's why he didn't come forward. Not saying I'm justifying it, but let's say initially his reasoning for not telling police what he actually did was for her protection, thinking she was going to come home. And then now 2 years later, he could come forward, but he might be under the assumption that you're under, which is now if he comes forward 2 years later and gives a different version, could he be putting himself in a situation where now law enforcement's going to be looking at him for a crime he didn't commit? I'm just throwing it out there. That may not be the case.
Yeah, but it was 2 years later. It was 2 years later
that
the police went and talked to him again. You don't think you would wait like 2 weeks and be like, guys, sorry, I didn't mean to lie, but I just want to. Don't you think 2 years is more suspicious than 2 weeks?
I wish I had an answer for why people do what they do as far as when they cooperate, when they don't cooperate, their reasonings behind not cooperating. It would make our jobs as investigators a lot easier, because we're not only trying to put the facts together, but you also have to play psychologist and figure out, you know, why people do what they do. And it makes things very interesting, to say the least. But overall, as far as the case is concerned, yeah, I think we can pick apart this particular story as far as Freeman and her boyfriend, and now, like you mentioned, Brian. If this is all true, if we're just to take it all at face value, I think you mentioned he died in 2022, right? So he's not going to answer for what he did if that's exactly what happened, which sucks. But this does speak to a bigger story here about, like I was saying at the top of the show, with true crime. Because even with Criminal Coffee, we ended up, obviously, we had the case that we just did, Preble Penny case, or should I say Preble Peter, or Albert Frost more specifically, where you figure out the who, and then you can potentially figure out the how, and maybe, if you're really lucky, the why. And what I mean by that is, if you're able to identify skeletal remains, whether it's a Jane Doe, John Doe, Baby Doe, whatever, then you can go back to the original story when that person went missing, if that's the circumstances surrounding it. And you can reverse engineer what potentially happened and also discredit initial statements if it's done in a relatively reasonable amount of time. We're actually, it's interesting that we're covering this case this week because I'm going through potential cases for Criminal Coffee. And the hurdle that I'm running into is we just did a Jane Doe, which turned out to be a John Doe case. And I'm working with a couple labs where personally, I'd love to do a case where we have DNA that just needs to be ran for a potential suspect and have Criminal Coffee make an arrest. But a lot of those cases are funded almost immediately, which is a good thing, which is a good thing. So now I'm looking at cases that are Jane Does, John Does, or Baby Does, but have an element to them where if it's a child, and I hate to say this, most children don't just go missing and die on their own by accident. If the skeletal remains of a baby doe is found, there's more than likely a story behind it. And so I'm starting to focus on those cases because if we can identify the child, then we can start to go into that case and figure out who was last seen with them, what were their stories at the time, and potentially discredit them, go back and speak to them if it hasn't been so long, where maybe through that, you know, having this new technology and the ability to do what we're doing now, we could potentially solve a murder. And that's the angle we're going with now, where 10 years ago, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So as far as this story is concerned, kind of sad because will we ever know the truth? I don't know. I feel like there's probably some truth in there. Why people decided to do what they did, that's for you guys to judge and figure out what you think about it. But I mean, personally, I agree with you. I think Jessica should have came forward sooner. I think the boyfriend should have. But again, why people do what they do, I have no clue. But overall, the bigger picture here is that although this is a sad case, what this says for true crime is that having this new science, having this new technology, and the rapid ability to identify these individuals is a good thing for true crime and overall is going to give answers to a lot of families that deserve it.
And I will say, talking about Criminal Coffee and funding things, I honestly think that every police station that possibly can should have this rapid DNA machine thing. And I just looked it up. Now, it's $250,000 for each machine, and each sample can cost about $150. However, based on, like, when we were at Intermountain Forensics, remember how much some of those machines cost?
Yeah, over $1 million.
Millions of dollars, right? Yep. So it's a small price tag to pay for the police to be able to identify a suspect a lot faster. Lessen the likelihood that people wanted for other crimes will be released, lessen the likelihood that you're sending violent criminals back out onto the streets to victimize more people. And I think that's worth it. So I really do believe that obviously Criminal Coffee can't buy every police station in the country a rapid DNA test machine because it's $250,000. But there should be some sort of fund to set up for something like this to make sure that every police station or law enforcement or sheriff's office has one, because I think that obviously not right away, but within the next 10 years or so, everyone should have one because the benefits far outweigh the cost, I think.
I agree with you. I'm just going to bring it down to planet Earth for a second because I hate this, but it's the truth. Just to give you a small sample size, I was a police officer in Rhode Island. Rhode Island's the smallest state in the country. We have 39 municipalities. 39 times 250,000. And I could tell you for some departments, like where I worked, shout out Central Falls, we're known nationally because we were one of the first cities to go bankrupt in the entire country during that time when everything was really bad. And it made national news. The entire city went into bankruptcy and we had to have receivership come in and the courts had to take the city over. So $250,000 when I was in an administrative role, even if the technology would solve every crime in the country, it's one of those things where we weren't getting stuff like that unless we got a grant from the government.
We should do that too. I mean, look at all the money, the tax money we spend on extraneous, stupid stuff that really we need to be protecting our citizens here. And this is a good way to do it.
You ain't going to get an argument from me. You ain't going to get an argument from me. I'm completely with you. The spending we do from a national perspective, that's a different conversation for a different day, but it's one of those things where in a perfect world, we would have it. Now, one option I would say is what you could do potentially in Rhode Island, in other states that are bigger, you'd have to have more of them, but you could have a situation where you get together with a few municipalities and you purchase one unit and you share that unit. But that does become an issue because now you got to transport people who've been arrested to these locations. And obviously there's always, you know, security concerns with that. And also when you arrest someone for a license or for a misdemeanor crime, you want to get them out of there as fast as possible. And so having them have to sit in a cell or be transported to multiple police stations for this process is very cumbersome and ties up that officer for the entire time. So I'm going into all the weeds here, like the reality of what it is. Like on the surface, it's like, get the machine.
Maybe we should make a law or like try to get a bill passed. Like the government has to fund one of these machines, at least in like every 50 miles, you know, like a police station every 50 miles. That way, if you do have to transport somebody, you have to, but at least it's within driving distance.
50 miles?
Yeah. Is that not driving distance?
That's like over an hour.
Okay. 30 miles.
Not even that. It would be, that's, well, I mean, it's if we're on the highway the entire time, that, and imagine how many arrests they're making a night. Listen, I'm with you, but I'm glad we're having this conversation.
Maybe there should be processing stations then with every 50 miles, and that's where you bring them to process them, fingerprint them, and take their DNA. And then if anything pings, then you can bring them to their respective jail. But if not, you can just let them go.
So let me throw this at you. This is a great conversation because these are things that people don't think about. So there's three guys working a shift. I'm bringing my guy to the processing station. There's a shooting while I'm 30 miles away or 20 miles away, and there's only two guys on the road, and someone's calling for help. If I'm in my local jurisdiction, I can throw that prisoner back in a cell and be at that call in under 5 minutes. So response time becomes an issue too because you have minimum manning. Some nights you may have two officers working. Now, if you're at a processing station, there may be one person on the road. It's crazy. It's crazy.
I have an idea for that.
No, you don't.
What if you have a specific police officer with a van who's tasked with transporting prisoners from like the place they're arrested to the processing station and then lets the beat cops go back to doing their job and only needs to call them when they have to fill out the paperwork and stuff?
So this is getting
designated, specialized.
No, that wouldn't work at all. Not even close. Because
listen, at least I'm trying.
No, but this is a good conversation because just to counter that, really simply, we're making 5 or 6 arrests on a shift a night. So he's on the road or she's on the road bringing one prisoner, and I arrest another one. They're going to turn around and come back, or they're just going to keep going back and forth. What about the person they're transporting?
There can be little locked bus stations everywhere that you can put them in and store them, and then just like put the location so that the transporter can go and get them and unlock the little
like an
glass
locker.
Box.
Yeah.
Yes,
exactly.
An Amazon locker for criminals.
Yeah, exactly. For people who may have
just
like
constitutional rights violated there.
Yeah, exactly. But this
but
is
listen,
we're joking.
This is how you change the world. All right.
This is a great conversation because a lot of people who have never done it before think the same way. I have conversations with family and friends all the time like this. Not about this particular subject, but about this type of where like, why can't they just do this? Why can't you just do that? And listen, on the inside, we're saying it.
I think police officers sometimes get so defeated because they're so close to the situation that they don't even bother trying to come up with other like thoughts because it's just like, I know everything I try to do is just going to be like, I'm going to be cut off at the knees. I know that we don't have the resources. I know we don't have the manpower. Like so you don't even start to like let your brain think about potential.
No, we put in for grants.
Yeah,
that's all
like,
you can do.
You know,
you got to try to get one in your city.
Dude, remember when things were such on a smaller scale and you just had to worry about one town and then you could absolutely do something like this? But now everything's just so big and federally controlled and everything's just so out of hand.
It's also finances. Like smaller departments, like there's jurisdictions.
Yeah, when there was community thing, it's like everybody would pitch in the community. Like, yes, we don't want criminals to be wandering the streets. Let's get this DNA kit. And then everybody would, you know, donate and help and be, you know, like that when you were on such a smaller scale, it was easier to do. And now we're all so spread out and so densely populated that everybody's just so isolated. They're not connected to their communities and they don't think about stuff like this. But it's just so much harder to solve a problem when it's already out of control.
I'll even throw a bigger curveball at you.
Throw it.
You're operating under the assumption that, let's just do with this particular example, everyone would want this DNA machine. I can tell you right now that there'd be a large portion in any jurisdiction where the people would say, I don't want my DNA being uploaded to a database that's an invasion of my privacy. I don't even like the fact that they're taking my fingerprints for a suspended license or, an unpaid warrant or something like that, something trivial, something minor. There's a lot of people that would say, I don't want my tax dollars going to a machine that I feel is invasive and a violation of my privacy. Now, you may not think that, and you may be like, well, that's crazy. But are you going to tell me, based on the conversations we've had and the comments we get about certain things, that this is not going to be and I'm talking on the level of the citizens themselves, all the way up to the people in political positions that would argue this is an overreach by law enforcement. So that's a whole nother layer that law enforcement is dealing with when trying to get these types of programs or machines or technologies brought into their police departments.
Yeah, I mean, I think that should be at some point not really an option, because once again, it could be taken to a public vote, because the people in the community are who you're protecting mm-hmm. from these criminals that they could be releasing when they still are violent and they have committed violent offenses and you just didn't catch them yet. So the community should vote. It really shouldn't be this arbitrary decision that someone makes. The community should say, hey, do we want to be safer or no? Vote yes or no. Circle one. You know,
this conversation we're having in a 30-minute window, imagine every single thing that you need. Yeah, the technology, every time you need something for the police department, it goes from the sergeant to the lieutenant to the captain to the major to the police chief, who then has to bring it over to the mayor's office. They have to put it in front of the city council. Then it has to get sent back. And then you can apply for the grant writer, who can then write the grant for the federal government, who has this grant for this specific technology or vehicle you're looking for. There's, 250 departments applying for it. Then you'll get a partial grant. So now you only need half the money. How do you raise that? What accounts are you pulling from?
I feel like I'm having a panic attack. Don't talk about this stuff with me. Yep. I'm an ideas person, not a money person.
It was a nightmare. I got the canine unit brought back when I was a police officer. I wanted a canine unit. I actually did it for my thesis for my, I don't know if it was my bachelor's or my master's. I can't remember, but I did my thesis on it. And it was like a dual thing where I wrote this up and I wrote it from the perspective of submitting it to the police chief. So I kind of, double dip there, but it worked out because got my degree and I got the police canine unit brought back and it's still there. I'm happy to say. Even after my departure. So that was something that was a huge undertaking. And I had to reach out to community members and business leader owners to try to raise the funds for a $12,000 dog. Just $12,000. It was like a nightmare.
Wow.
$12,000.
But that's also a thing.
And by the way, I couldn't even get the $12,000. We got a used dog. And shout out Axel. He's no longer with us.
A used dog.
But we got a dog that was with the Newport Police Department that the canine handler could no longer take. And so we took him over. And we got basically a dog who'd already been in use for
a used dog. How could you talk about Axel that way? Don't speak ill of
him. Shout out Axel. He got it going, man. Rest in peace.
And that's another thing, though. These companies inflate the price of things. You know what I mean?
Well, it's for the training, right?
So I understand. But $250,000 for this machine? Come on.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm going, this is what Crime Weekly News is for. Speaking of dogs and speaking of machines, and this is my little and I'm going to get the veterinarians that are going to come after me. My dog just got injured at home. We don't know how. His legs were a little limp, and he's only 2 years old. Shout out Vinny. And French Bulldog, we bring him to the vet, and he needs an MRI to identify what's going on with him. They think it could be a back injury. $6,000. Now I know, let me start by saying, should have had insurance. You're right. I'm wrong. We'll go there. But then we're talking about it and they're saying the machine costs $350,000 and that's why it's so expensive for these scans. And I have multiple issues with it. One, how long have you been paying for that machine? How much of it's paid off? Because you're still charging the $6,000, even though it's probably paid off. But more importantly, the fact that the machine was $350,000 to start with, it's just crazy. Nothing's easy anymore.
No, it's not. And once again, it's like a college tuition. It costs a certain amount. And then all of a sudden, you could go to school for $15,000, $20,000. And all of a sudden, you're in debt $500,000 for a college education. That honestly, what did you learn? I mean, unless you're a doctor or a lawyer, what did you learn? So Yeah, it's just the capitalism, inflation, greediness. I don't think that machine should be $250,000. I guarantee you
it'll come down eventually. It'll come down.
I guarantee you it didn't cost anywhere close to that to make it. But what are you going to do?
Supply and demand, right?
That's the world we live in. And
but to bring it back, because I know we're being negative Nellies right now, positive note, the technology is available. It's out there. And as time progresses, it will become more prevalent and it will be reduced in price and will be more readily available to police departments throughout the country. Hopefully, it leads to more stories like this in a quicker period of time so that when a body is identified, they can go after the people responsible before they're deceased. That would be the plan. But obviously, thinking of Autumn's family, we're glad they have the answers to, you know, at least where she is and is she still with us? They have that. And I do feel like even though there may not be a conviction, who knows, we'll stay on this. I'm sure the family
There's no conviction, I mean, at this point, because...
Yeah, exactly.
This girl got immunity. Even if she was involved, the deal's done.
Deal's done, but at least they have a pretty good idea of what happened, and they might have had their own speculations as far as what occurred, so now this could put some of those to rest. Maybe the boyfriend's involved, maybe he isn't. There's all these questions that can now be answered that help give a little bit more peace to the family. It's never going to give them full closure, but I've said it before, I think for me as a parent, the unknown would be worse than the knowing. Just not knowing if they're still out there or if they could I still find them? Am I not doing enough? So I hope that this brings them some type of, I don't know, just some semblance of like,
peace,
hey, listen, this
something.
Is where we are.
Yeah.
This is where we are. So thinking of them, any final words before, this was a long one tonight, but any final words before we wrap this thing up?
No, I'm all good.
Okay. We appreciate you guys being here. If you made it to the end of the video, take a second, like, and subscribe to the channel. You don't even have to comment. If you want to comment, go right ahead. If you're listening on audio, leave a review. It'd be greatly appreciated. We have some people that shouted out. A lot of people watching. Not everyone's liking. Click that like button. It takes 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. It's right above you if you're watching on YouTube. And if you're listening on audio, we appreciate your support. We will be back later this week with the Roden Family Massacre Part 4. Mm-hmm. Make sure you don't miss that one. We have a lot of B-roll in that episode that's going to give you the details about the case that maybe you're not going to see anywhere else. So we'll break that down. We'll talk about it. Everyone stay safe out there. We will see you Friday on audio and Sunday on YouTube. Have a good night. Be safe.
Bye.